2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andreas Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at KSLPodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Never before have you felt such a buzz.
And this is exactly what I need.
Yeah! Party time!
Now listen!
Welcome to SLC Fanboys, three guys who love Star Wars, comic books, gaming, movies, and fangirls. Adam Thomas, self-appointed Starfleet captain and Cylon sympathizer. Andy Farnsworth, comic book Jedi and George Lucas apologist. Tyson Webb, Comic-Con moderator and amateur Sith. These are the SLC Fanboys.
The SLC Fanboys blasting in with another edition of the show, and this time we are taking a look. Andy, just play that torpedo sound effect that I want. Oh, that is like a medicating salve on my soul, hearing the original series.
Is it music to your ears?
Oh, yes. Yes, yeah. It is. So Star Trek Discovery, the mid-season finale of Season 1, has now come and gone, and we are in a two-month hiatus. We can talk about the necessity for that a little bit later, but we are now in a two-month hiatus, giving us time to talk about the first exciting 9 episodes, beginning with, and we'll work a little back from here, Sunday's finale.
Into the Woods.
Into the Woods, I Go.
I think it's Into the Woods, I Go.
They're going with longer, like, whole phrase episode titles this season.
Well, did you see the last one, the Si Vis Pacem, Bada Para Bellum? It was Latin for if you want peace, prepare for war.
Yeah, and then there was the lamb, the butcher's knife cares not for the lamb's cry.
Yes.
Yes, that might be longer than For the World is Hollow and I Have Touched the Sky, but I don't
but
know.
But slightly.
I don't know.
By the way, you get salved by the torpedoes. I love this portion of the theme of Discovery. I just love it. I love this portion.
The music has been very good. Okay, beginning with the mid-season finale, we are left off with the USS Discovery in a weird part of space. They did not identify where or even when they were.
No, and I think that, you know, I liked that they did that.
Yes.
I mean, that's a great way to leave a cliffhanger. You didn't think they were going to blow up. We still know we're getting more episodes.
Yes, and I'm
glad. But something blew up.
And I'm glad that this half season here sort of ended with a major part of the Klingon War sort of being retired and moved aside. Mm-hmm. I don't want to say that the Klingon War hasn't been a good plot and I have enjoyed it, but I really love the pace of this show. And right at the point about every week where I get to the point where, okay, I think I know where they're going with this subplot or this development, it gets solved either that week or the next week. It's not drawn out. And one of the first examples of this was early on in the season when the tardigrade was...
The bug, yeah.
Yeah, well, they showed that, no, this is a living creature and maybe this is getting hurt. And you started hearing the rumblings about that in the fourth episode, or just pretty much right after they started using it. Well, by the fifth or sixth, that thing is gone. It's done. Yeah, that's all.
They jettisoned that pretty quick.
Yeah. Well, I was worried. It's like, please don't drag out the ethical, you know, issues of this plot line for 4 or 5 episodes of the whole season. Just please don't. And that was just the first example. Another example was, here's Cole of the House of Kor, the top villain post episode 2. And, you know, he's rising in prominence.
I liked him.
This ghost ship, the ship of the dead, is a big part of it. Boom.
Cole's the guy with the red streaks down his eyes.
Yes, he was the leader of the House of Kor that got killed in the Sunday finale, the mid-season finale. Again, going into that, I'm thinking they're going to stretch out this ship of the dead and probably Cole as a lead antagonist probably for the rest of the season. Heck, maybe Cole's even going to be around for the remainder of the series because he was I enjoyed him. He was evil. He was vicious. The makeup was really good. Mm-hmm. So they are really moving along with this series. And before I can get too cynical with, oh, I know where this is going, or I've seen this Star Trek before, they're moving on to something else, and it's working for me. It really is.
Well, and but we've got 9 episodes, so they've really condensed a lot of story into 9 episodes, but still keeping a little bit of that episodic format. Because I admit, I didn't want one where all we got was a small piece of the overall story every single time, and it was like a 9-hour that I need to watch 9 hours in a row to get the whole arc. But they did a good job of breaking it up while still moving the overall story along. I was a little surprised that it ended up being the Klingon War, because somehow I didn't know that they'd had a war. I knew that supposedly the Federation had fought with the Klingons or with the Romulans, but not the Klingons. So, you know, this was kind of like, well, that seems like a major thing that I somehow didn't know in all the years I watched Star Trek that they're putting this in. But I'm okay with what they've done. They've also kept it as, what's it, about 6 months?
Yeah.
So, I mean, if this was like a 5-year-long war, that would seem like something that would have come up somewhere else in the timeline. But a 6-month conflict that then the Federation and Klingons just sort of keep their distance until maybe they meet again in the Trouble. Is it Trouble with Tribbles that we meet them the first time, or is it Journey to Babel?
Omega Glory, I
think. Oh, is it Omega? The first time we meet them in the original series, I'm still assuming we're going to get an explanation.
With the real Kor, John Colicos, who played I don't think it was John Colicos. I'm sorry, I had the wrong actor's name. But Kor was one of the original Klingons. He was the one who threatened to use the Klingon mind sifter on Captain Kirk and Mr. Spock when they
that guy's
were
name
posing.
Was Kor?
That was Kor of the House of Kor.
Oh.
He was one of the three Klingons who later showed up with Dax in Deep Space Nine. He was the Klingon who finally died in Deep Space Nine leading the Bird of Prey against the Jem'Hadar in the glorious death when he was way gone. I mean, like, he was delusional by that point. He thought he was fighting
Kirk. So this is a thread that's run through the whole series.
Oh, yeah.
That's really cool.
And Cole was the leader of the House of Kor. There was no explanation given for why Cole is. I think you can presume that maybe he's an older family member or rose to power within the House of Kor in a way that's not generally, agreed upon, that not a good way.
Well, isn't assassination the way of the Klingon, though?
Yeah.
Like, you challenge him, if I think I'm stronger, if I'm the alpha male, I will defeat you, and then everyone will follow me.
Well, he had a closet full of Klingon bodies, so, you know, there was
he did have that.
So apparently...
But that was the Ship of the Dead, so maybe that was already there. Maybe he was just borrowing a closet that
was
already
supposed
full of
to
bodies.
Be there.
So, Tyson, you say you are really enjoying this show. What has worked for you so far this season?
All right, so yeah, I'm loving this show. Look, I'm a huge Star Wars fan, and I've never really gotten into Star Trek. I like the newer movies, but this season has been amazing. I love the dynamic between the captain and
Burnham,
thank you.
Very unusual.
I love
Star
how
Trek
they
series.
Started with her as first officer, and she fell from glory, right? And she's trying to, I mean, she's not really even trying to make her way back. She's just trying to find her way in the whole Federation and what's going on with her life right now.
Well, but part of the interesting thing is that also, while she's doing all of that, there's that sort of anvil hanging over her head of, when this is done, I'm going back to prison, because...
Right.
I still personally feel, and I've never felt otherwise, that she's not going to get a full pardon somewhere. But they've done enough twists in this series. If she doesn't get a pardon and goes back to prison at the end of it, I can't say I'd be shocked. I'd be a little surprised, but not shocked.
If you were a writer, the showrunner for Star Trek Discovery, your biggest fear about having a lead character be, for all intents and purposes, a Vulcan. I know she's human, but she was raised Vulcan. She acts Vulcan.
Yeah,
so we'll
right.
just call her for the rest of this episode a Vulcan, just for conversation's sake. The problem with a lead character, you want to put the whole series around her, is that a Vulcan, by definition, is not going to be very engaging, very emotional.
Mm-hmm.
There's just not a lot of opportunity for an actress or even a character to really shine and break through if they are the lead character of the series.
And I was really nervous about that. For the first few episodes, when they made it clear that she was raised Vulcan and that's her background, I was really – and then what was her father figure's name again?
Sarek.
Yeah, Sarek. Yeah. In the episodes with him, I was like, how is her arc going to mm-hmm. progress, and is she really going to be able to break out of this? So.
Her development has really come along. In the first few episodes, I wouldn't say I was unsure or I didn't like her. I just didn't know if this formula
was hard
was
to
going
understand
to work.
Her.
Yeah, it was hard to understand. But one of the keys to her character, and for me to like her by extension, mm-hmm. Cadet Tilly. That's why Cadet Tilly is in this in this series.
Okay,
they can find anybody
and to give away things on accident.
Yes, they can find anyone to spit out the technobabble in the engineering room in the spore drive. They can find anybody to do that. But they needed a very human, a very flawed character mm-hmm. to sort of befriend and kind of expose Michael Burnham for the human that
she really
is
yeah.
and not the
right,
cold
yeah.
Vulcan. And it's because of that, because Tilly just has this weird attraction to Michael from the, and I love that first line that she had. She walked in the third episode and said, "Oh wow, a roommate, that's like an automatic built-in friend."
Yeah.
That is such a geeky, weird, awkward thing to say, but it's immediately endearing. And you have not had a character like
that. You know her immediately by just her saying that with her first line. Oh, this is the type of character she is.
Yes.
She feels awkward around other people, and apparently other people don't necessarily like to be around her.
But it's because of the strength of that relationship, I'm really enjoying the Burnham struggle now. And it also gives new life to that plot line because, as you guys just mentioned, she has kind of a defeatist attitude about this. She is very fine with the decisions she made. She believes she made the right decisions. It did not turn out the way she wanted, but she does not have regrets in the sense of...
if only I hadn't done this, everything would be great.
Yeah, she probably has regrets in that she just didn't predict it soon enough and just complete what she wanted to do.
Yeah.
So she is not remorseful. She has accepted her fate. And so she, by episode three, she's sitting on the shuttle. She's prepared to kind of sleepwalk for the rest of her life.
Yeah.
And I really like the development to now she's arguing with Captain Lorca to go on the Klingon ship. I'm the only person who can do this mission. So
yeah,
I think,
but
I think
that
Burnham's,
also brought up the question of we haven't found out yet what Lorca really wants with Burnham because, you know,
he's
done
her,
a lot of things. Well, yeah, but there's something more. He has a use for her that he hasn't revealed or let on to anybody, and I'm curious. That even comes up in the final episode when she's like, why do you have me here? If you're not going to have me go do this, what's the point of me being here?
Right. Well,
I'm expendable. I'm literally expendable, and I can take care of this for you. Why wouldn't you send me?
It was interesting to me that the captain told Tyler, right, bring her back or don't come back at all.
Yeah.
So, and that really kind of cements that he needs her, or
hijacked the prison ship. I don't think Starfleet knew he did what he did.
Yeah.
To be honest, that they haven't really explored that yet.
Some of the things that they're filling in along the way. Some of these things, as far as plot developments and references, are small and minor references to other things we've mentioned in Star Trek and seen in other episodes or movies. And then other times, they're kind of going back in and adding history. And I think one of the best examples of that is Sarek, and how we are now learning that there was this additional child in the Sarek household around the time that Spock was growing up. And the first thing I would say to anybody who immediately says, oh, well, now you're just rewriting history, it was established in Star Trek V that Spock has other family things going on, and he does not talk about them. Sarek does not talk about family things at all. In fact, in Unification Part 2 in The Next Generation, it was a very, you know, kind of a famous scene at the end. Sarek says, I never melded. Or, excuse me, Spock. Spock tells Picard, I never melded with my own father.
So he has to meld with his own father through Picard.
So I think when you take all of that into account and go back to the fact that Michael Burnham's life was saved through a mind meld with Sarek that created a link, that creates a fascinating dynamic between his sort of adopted human daughter and his real half-human, half-Vulcan
son.
Biological son. And I love that episode where we got to see Michael Burnham. Basically, it's like you're at high school graduation and the admissions officer for your Ivy League college runs up to you and says, oh, yeah, that full scholarship, not going to happen. You are not getting into Harvard. Sorry.
Yeah.
And that's basically, we were left there with her just kind of like whimpering there like, I want to leave. And I thought that was such a fantastic scene that adds to the lore and the legacy of Star Trek, because it really helps define, in Sarek's mind, the betrayal of Spock when Spock also chose to join Starfleet. When he basically created a position in the Vulcan Science Academy
for him,
and made a choice to kind of screw over his adopted daughter. I really enjoyed that.
What I'm liking about this series is the ties to the rest of the Star Trek universe, and we hoped they would do this.
Yeah.
We hoped it wouldn't be hit you over the head with a mallet. Oh, look! Hey, look, it's Captain Kirk walking by in this corridor over here. But it's more like, if you know the history of Sarek and Spock, like all that stuff you just talked about, if you know that already, then that scene is like even more poignant. But even if you don't know that,
it's still a good
you
scene.
Can be like, oh man, how much would that suck to, you know, to be qualified to be there and to be told no, and you have no idea why. And the way they tell it, where you have to keep watching the scene over and over again to get all the pieces, that does a great job of it too. So you can have the additional enjoyment. I like that you can have additional layers of enjoyment depending on what you know. For example, how about this? If you've never watched Star Trek, you're like, okay, they shot the missiles at him. But if you have, I thought the same thing. I didn't quite have the same epiphany as you did.
Was so awesome.
But I thought, that's the original sound. Same thing when Stamets is in the medical bay and you hear the – I didn't find that sound, but it's that weird going up sound that they had in the old series. That who knows what that sound does. Mm-hmm. But it's there, and it was recognizable to me who'd watched the old series.
Production elements, I'm fine with the production elements. I think the sets look look great. I think they found a good way to sort of integrate this to not make it look like – look, you're not going to produce a TV series in 2017.
That looks like 1965. You don't.
That's just not going to look like it's going to fit comfortably before the original series. So you just kind of have to define areas to try to do that, and then areas where you just, hey, don't even worry about it.
Well, now think about this, though, and here's an aside on just on that point. We haven't seen anything – that looks like that era yet. They've kept the Discovery on its own.
Yeah.
Other than when you see, like, and then the blue uniforms certainly lean much more toward Enterprise, mm-hmm. which is in canon, than they do, you know, towards the original series. But we haven't run in, we didn't get to see the Starbase.
The phasers are
close. We haven't seen the other ships.
The phasers are very close.
Right. And the sound of the proton, photon. Photon. There was my Star Wars creeping in.
Stay but, on target.
My rebel skulls. But I like that those things are there, and I, whether it's intentional or not, this is a ship that spends its whole time on its own. It's their secret weapon, so they're not having it hang with the rest of the fleet. So that's a kind of an easy way to avoid some of the questions of, hey, now, why does the Constitution-class ship use these funky little yellow blocks that you put in a hole mm-hmm. while this ship has all this fancy stuff? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So...
All right, coming up on the next part of this review of Star Trek Discovery, the first half of Season 1 here, we're going to take a look at the second half that's coming up, some predictions, some plot lines that have yet to be resolved, and then Season 2, some of the things that we would like to see on the new Star Trek series that's coming up on the Fanboys. SLC Fanboys, Adam Thomas, Andy Farnsworth, and Tyson Webb.
That's me! Hey, that's me! Thanks for inviting me over.
His nickname is Worldwide. That way you'll always remember it.
Oh, that's a good one.
Thank you. I will, because I actually did kind of like it is.
How many times for the first like month did I get both of your names backwards? I know you, but it's like, I don't know why I would call Andy.
You called him Andy all the time.
All the time.
I don't know if you called me Adam, but...
We're talking Star Trek Discovery, taking a look at the second half of the first season, which will premiere in the first week of January. And on that note, I would like to say my real top criticism for Star Trek Discovery, and this isn't a huge criticism, I don't like this idea of pausing for 2 months and rolling out the second half of the season. I understand that the way that the production schedules work, the way CBS wanted to get that premiere in late September, I understand that that was sort of forced, and they probably even planned for it because they weren't exactly sure how the end of the season would work out, if they would have a renewal for season two. I understand some of that. I still think, A, the gap between the halves here could have been cut down to not 2 full months, or at the very least, just find or prepare for a solution, a better workaround. I just think that if this thing was airing every week on CBS, hey, fine, take your break like every other show does. If you're slow rolling this once per week on a streaming service,
it feels like you could probably keep it going.
Yeah, just
well, either, you know, because like they didn't drop the whole series at once. And it's like, okay, it's all done. Now we got to start on the next thing. It's, you know,
which is a money grab. I mean, it is what it is. It's a money grab.
Yeah.
And at $5.99 a month, I'm not too upset about it. But I still don't like the fact that I'm going to have to cancel probably in a week or two because I want to watch the whole series over a couple of times. And then I'm going to have to bring it back in January.
But it'll save you, what, $12? $10?
Yeah, but again, it's just, you know.
Well, that to me is one of the interesting things, because to me the paywall wasn't a problem. But I know that there were a lot of people who watched the first episode. I have several friends who were kind of on the fence on Star Trek. Mm-hmm. And they kind of liked what they saw, but then they're like, I don't want to pay to see this. And then they didn't. And so it wasn't a huge deal for me. Also, I stream a lot of CBS shows anyway, because most of my watching is streaming. I never get to sit in front of a TV. So to me, there's actually added value to it. I can watch some of the other shows, but you know, I would probably do what you do and just pay for the months that I'm going to watch it, unsign up for a while, then if I feel the need to go back, sign up
Did
again.
You say unsign up?
Unsign up, unsubscribe, whatever you want to
call. I
think
you're going to see a lot of CBS All Access app commercials. I think they're going to use the success of the first half of the series to really get those
downloads. To me, it's an interesting question, is how big of a success is it? How much is the streaming numbers? I know at least you found the hard way that on some Sunday nights when you're trying to watch it, there must be enough people trying.
I think that's more my apartment complex, because Sunday night is a prime streaming night for the world.
For everybody.
Okay. So if my apartment in their base level entry high-speed wireless internet, yeah.
Then, I've had no problem.
Yeah. But, you know, with my weird schedule, I'll tell you what, when I get up in the mornings at like 4 or 5 o'clock on Saturday or Sunday, I could stream anything
at the highest speed possible.
So the show's going to come back, and we're going to pick up where the left off, which is the Discovery is in, looks like, this debris field. It's not where they were supposed to go. Stamets,
the lighting's
is half
different
passed
too.
Out. The lighting's different.
It looks like they're in the upside down in space.
Did you see tentacles along the walls?
No, but there's floating debris and stuff.
That's true. They just seem to be little white flecks floating.
Space looked darker.
Wait, stars.
Space looked darker, though. It looks like they're... What was he talking about?
Universe?
He was showing the map, and he was saying that because of the jumps, they were mapping all of these other...
Yeah that's something that's
worth
exploring.
Portals outside of the known universe.
Yeah. When Captain Lorca was... And some people have criticized this scene as Lorca still trying to put one over on Stamets. And I didn't perceive that scene at all. I think Lorca really sensed that all of the stops he's been pulling, all of the rules he's broken or bent to get has gotten them to this very successful point where this Klingon ship has been destroyed. They're looking optimistic. Things are looking good. It's working out. And I think that's when he went in there to reassure Stamets, like, hey, all this stuff.
Because we're not just using you as a guinea pig to win a war. There's more.
Lorca's not a humble guy. He's not going to go up to him, Stamets, and apologize. He's not going to go up to Stamets and say,
no,
I understand your sacrifices. He's still going to try a different route. So they're having that conversation, and I think that's what Lorca latched on to really kind of say our bright new future is here. We've been doing all this traveling. We've discovered these little pockets, and we think those are alternate universes or alternate realities,
right,
but we're not sure. But once all this is done, we're going to find out because the age of discovery is here.
Exactly. That's what Stamets wants to do, right? He wants to go and explore. That's the entire basis of
that's
that
how he
ship.
Gets him to go stick himself back in and torture himself for the next 3 hours.
For one more jump. So they're going to have to figure out what's going on.
Oh, by the way,
here.
As soon as he said, just one more jump, gee, I wonder what could happen.
Yes.
With that.
Yes. Yes.
Two days to retirement.
But yes, it was. But I remember looking at the class. Okay, we're about 52 minutes in here. Okay, so it wasn't like they telegraphed this for an episode or two.
No, no,
this
that's
is
true.
Coming up
that's
real
true.
Soon here, and it did. Okay, so obviously, I'm pretty sure this is going to be a mirror universe crossover once we get into the second half of this season.
That is an interesting scuttlebutt. That is an interesting theory. And honestly, I would love that.
The showrunners have all but admitted that, and they
really?
Admitted that months ago, that the mirror universe would have a role in the first season of Star Trek Discovery. Like, when I say all but admitted, it's that, you know, nod, nod, wink, wink, not answering certain questions or that kind of thing.
Now, if you're not aware, just for some reason you don't know, if you only watch Star Trek Discovery, the mirror universe was brought in the original episode, Mirror, Mirror, where a transporter malfunction happens, and three of Kirk's crew, Kirk, Spock, and...
Was it... Scott, oh, no, it was multiple. Uhura went.
Yeah, Uhura went too. But anyway, it was three or four of the main crew end up on a bridge of the Enterprise that is familiar but different, and everybody has on a different uniform, and their Federation symbol has a big knife through it.
If you ever see somebody, the evil version
has a goatee.
It's spawned from this episode because evil Spock has a goatee.
So this whole universe where the Enterprise is essentially a mirror of themselves, they're not explorers, they're warmongers, and they're essentially the Klingons. They kill to keep themselves in power, and all this stuff's going on. So the mirror universe then pops around in... It never made it into the show Next Generation, although it made it into a couple of books, which I actually thought were pretty interesting.
Yeah.
And then it made it into Deep Space Nine,
multiple episodes. In fact, it really got expanded upon in Deep Space Nine to where it was almost a second-running show in the background. There was like three or four episodes dedicated to it. And then you had a two-parter right near the end of Enterprise, which was probably the wildest, just most fun 2 hours of Enterprise.
They had a mirror universe for Enterprise?
Oh, it was a two-parter.
So we already have that universe.
It was really good.
Oh, I got to watch that one because this is going to have to tie into it.
The Enterprise Mirror Universe one, the Tholians are involved. I mean, this is where Enterprise finally started to hit its groove because it's like, it's a Mirror Universe episode and the Tholians are in here and they had the little ships.
From the original series,
and they're
making their web.
Making the little web.
The episode in the original series was called The Tholian Web. Just
gotcha.
So you know, because you know you're
a
web.
I can relate.
Because you're a web, exactly.
Yeah.
But with the Mirror Universe, I've always been fascinated by this because, especially when you set up Star Trek as the paragon of good, and then you have that moment where you get to see the good of your characters like twisted to the evil side. That's what made it so fascinating in the first place, especially Spock, where, wait a minute, Spock couldn't possibly be evil. He's neutral. He has to be neutral in both universes.
Like, it's logical to eradicate this planet because they will fight the Federation. I mean, he was using logic in a very twisted way. It was creepy.
Meanwhile, the bad guys were on the original Enterprise trying to figure out what's going on.
But they got thrown in the brig, like, really fast. Like halfway through the episode, it's like a Spock, like the real Spock is doing, like, a captain's log. And they just show the evil versions of all the characters in the brig just going nuts.
Yeah, we figured this out pretty quick.
They figured that out, like, within 10 minutes.
We are so evolved as humanity that we immediately know when there's any badness going on.
So this is going to be exposed, I'm pretty sure, as a Mirror Universe crossover. And we'll have some effects there. I think two things are going to develop from this. Number one, However the Mirror Universe thing plays out, I think the sum of it is going to be the Spore Drive after the season is going to be off limits.
Right, that's where it ends up.
That's where
you can't have that drive existing in the Star Trek universe and no one talk or use or anything about it at any point later in the future.
It's basically a Raiders of the Lost Ark ending. This will open up
something.
This
is the warehouse.
We do not want to open up ever again. So we need to bury this research. We need to bury anything and just, you know, push it away into this warehouse in the middle of nowhere. I think it's that kind of solution, because the Spore Drive clearly cannot last beyond the series. That would be a little too much canon eradication there. Number two, there's going to be, I think, if they go the Mirror Universe route, I think we're going to have a character flip-flop, either as a surprise to the audience or a character is going to change at the end. And I think Lorca might be somebody who flip-flops with his Mirror Universe alternate, because remember, it's a Mirror Universe. It's not necessarily everyone's evil. It's Mirror Universe.
So, ooh.
So I'm wondering.
But when everyone
Lorca
was good,
is nice.
Evil,
but then Saru
be the
becomes like a predator instead of the hunted.
Because in cool. Enterprise and in Deep Space Nine, yes, it did show Bajorans were aggressive and military. So yes, it can go off.
Now that's interesting, because I have not seen those episodes. I just know of them. Mm-hmm. So I've only seen the original series, and then I read a really great graphic novel that DC Comics put out in the 80s that actually put a whole story together that gave the backstory, which I'm assuming is now going to get thrown out.
Spock took command
of the ship. And Savik is in it, and this whole thing where the whole reason that it's the Mirror Universe is that the Romulan Federation War that supposedly happened in deep space happened right at Earth, and the Romulans won, and so the Earth essentially had to fight their way out of bondage, and that's why they're a warlike, militaristic federation. So that was the explanation given in that comic. And then I'm assuming that's all thrown out because they kind of have carte blanche.
They don't treat the comics.
So, but I'm interested now. I want to see how it ties into the actual canon of the, there's a couple Enterprise episodes I should watch, it sounds like.
Well, it's just a two-parter right near the end.
Okay.
In a Mirror, Darkly.
And you should watch Mirror, Mirror if you want to know what the Mirror Universe is. You can watch it on a whole bunch of streaming services if you've never seen it. And that is actually one of the more enjoyable episodes of the series, even if you haven't watched the rest. So I agree with you on that. One of the things that I want to know, and my prediction is, what's with Lorca?
Yeah.
I mean, this is kind of weird, if you've watched Star Trek for a long time, to not really know what's going on in command. Usually that's reserved for the Admiralty, and so the whole ship is doing the right thing, but what's up with those crazy admirals ordering the ship over? I mean, even in First Contact, well, we're going to patrol and catalog gaseous anomalies while we're fighting the Borg. But in this, we don't even know what's going on the same ship. Like, what's the deal with Lorca's little battalion armory that he has? Why does he have that? You know, he had that... He slept with the Admiral. I mean, there's a lot about him. We don't know really anything about him except that he's got bad eyes.
And I don't.
And he fled the ship when everybody was dying, and he shot all of his own crew to save them.
That needs to be clarified. I don't think Lorca is supposed to be evil. I think he's flawed, and I think he's weak and doesn't know how to deal with certain things.
I thought for sure he was going to blow up the Admiral's shuttle.
Really. So did I.
I really did.
So did I.
'Cause she's like, well, I'm going to have to report you when I get back. He's like, all right, well, then we'll send you. Oh, shoot.
I didn't suspect that, because I think that would be a bridge that Star Trek can't cross, not with a title captain character.
That's an interesting theory.
I think that would be too far.
But I really thought for a sec that's what he was going to do.
Unless there was another factor here he was forced to, or he knew that, you know, if it was just a straight up, I'm going to murder
I thought
an
he was
animal.
Going to make it look like an accident. Like some explosive went off inside. It was planted, but, you know.
Well, I have
it wasn't like a photon or a proton.
Well, yeah, at some point he was going to make sure she died
so
she couldn't come back and get him removed from command.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it worked out for him, I guess, although she is back alive. And that's another thing that we got to see. Is she going to follow through with what she did, or is she going to say, okay, you handled yourself pretty well? PTSD. That was really interesting that they introduced that.
Oh, yeah. Funny that you should happen to mention that for Lieutenant Tyler. Yeah. Did you see that scene very closely, though?
Okay, I didn't watch it in slow motion because is the first time we see all Klingon. What? This isn't just Klingon cleavage in this scene.
But Lieutenant Tyler is a Klingon. He's Valk.
You've been saying that, but...
And it is true. Go back and watch the scene where he's having the flashbacks of his torture. They did several quick shots of his face, and you saw Klingon makeup phase in and out.
Do you think that they actually like hypnotized him to put him under so he doesn't know he's Klingon? Like, is he a sleeper and he doesn't even know it?
That's the question that needs to be asked. Is he a true sleeper or is he aware? I don't know, because I think it could work either way.
I don't believe
this is Valk, remember? This is Valk. And Burnham killed T'Kuvma. So yeah. As much as their relationship's kind of getting off the ground here, I would not put it past me that he's just playing her long term.
Yeah, but I just think the nuances of human – this is my opinion. The nuances of human character that he's shown, that's not something a Klingon who's had zero contact with the Federation or humans would know that well. The way he played things – it's the most convincing spy job I've ever seen from someone who's never had contact with the people they're infiltrating.
Okay, just remember the trouble with Tribbles. He was exposed as a Klingon infiltrator right at the very end, a normal-looking
human.
That's
true, and we know there's a Tribble on the Discovery. But we haven't seen him go into the office, have we? Have we seen him go into
no.
the office?
No.
Interesting.
One more note on the whole Lorca and Tyler thing. That scene last night, play the longer version with that torpedo.
Okay.
That scene on Sunday.
Fire.
They did the full Lost treatment, and it was so boss. Lorca takes his eye drops to prepare for the blinding flash of light. Then he moves in front of everybody, blocks everybody's view of the view screen, so he gets the best seat in the house in front of the good TV with his fancy little eye drops. Watches about half the Klingon ship explosion.
And turns around.
Turns around in slow motion with like a Giacchino-esque Lost score going on and does the slow walk off the bridge while everyone else is like, what?
I mentioned that to my wife.
And Burnham's like,
that is boss.
What? And then Tyler's like, yeah, that's right. I'm walking with you. And he turns around and walks out too. All while, I mean, it's just like, man, this is just ripped from Lost. This is too freaking awesome. And it started with that torpedo sound effect. And I'm serious. I watched that little 1 minute piece. I must have seen that 5 times on Sunday and Monday rewatching that because it's just like, that was a great climactic scene.
That was.
Shot in a new way. And I know it's not a groundbreaking way because I'm basically saying they ripped off a Lost style, but it just works so well.
I'm curious.
And Isaac's just, I mean, he just turned around like, yeah.
And you know what the best part about that is? We know him.
Yes.
Yes, we
know
do.
Him.
You know what? I went back. On his Twitter account, he has the pinned tweet from, I believe, March 2nd when it was the captain's chair, and he goes, ooh, hope this fits. So when he announced, that was like 6 weeks after we interviewed him.
Yeah.
He had to have had something.
Oh, he knew.
Had to have something in the back. He knew it. And we just... So, new
what
rule.
What would we have dared? New rule, we ask everyone if they're going to be captain on a Star Trek show.
Or with him in particular, do you have any lineup in Star Trek? Star Wars.
Oh, I know, and that's
coming
the worst.
Coming back in Harry Potter?
Honestly, that...
You coming back in the prequel? You're going to do another Johnny Depp scene, aren't you? You're going to do one of those Johnny Depp scenes, aren't you? In the next... what's the creature?
Fantastic Beasts.
You're in Fantastic Beasts. You're in Star Wars.
Oh,
Marvel,
you know, I
DC?
Cannot believe... That is my biggest regret, is that... I didn't ask him about Star Wars, and he was the freaking voice of the Inquisitor in Rebels, and I can't believe I forgot that. But he's doing a great job on Star Trek Discovery. I really like him as the captain, and I'm really looking forward to what we get to find out. I hope we get to find it out in the second half of Season 1, and they don't just say, okay, now we've got another season. Let's just push that into the next season. I want him to resolve stuff. I would love it if it became an anthology series like it was originally planned, where this is going to happen in this era and the next one happens in a different era. They said no to that to Brian Fuller because they said, that's a bit more ambitious. Let's see if we can get one season done correctly. Mm-hmm. And then Brian Fuller left. But they've still got the ideas.
And given,
wouldn't you love to see a version that's right before Next Generation?
And Jason Isaacs, in his involvement in the series, he could totally be a guy that departs after 1 year and they have kind of a different formula for season two. I could totally see that. But
they could kill everybody.
But I could also see them killing a lot of people here at the end and maybe even resolving Burnham that way too. I mean,
they could. I mean, she's the most famous person in Starfleet as a mutineer.
Yeah.
But we've never heard anything about it later on. So they've got to figure out a way to resolve that. As a Star Trek fan, obviously I'm not as big a Star Trek fan or at least as knowledgeable one as you, Adam. But I have enjoyed the series. I've enjoyed the special effects. I just kind of tell my brain, so what if it's better special effects than the original? Just enjoy it for what it is. And I have.
Yeah. And other than some things here or there where I think they're getting a little too loosey-goosey with the history, I try to overlook those because, again, I don't necessarily want writers of a modern show held to something that may have been written, you know, because they were forced to or kind of were backed into a corner decades ago for another series with different styles and different, you know, agendas and different things going on. So I try not to beat them up over that. I would say, though, in the second half, I want more, and they've kind of joked about it even, and it was the topic of the discussion with Stamets. I want more Discovery, and I think we had some a lot of that in the second part of this first half,
yes,
where the Klingon War was sort of, you know, put on the back burner, was still important going on. I liked Star Trek Avatar episode. That's what I call it, because yeah, it was basically Avatar.
That's right.
And then I even liked the one-off episode where they really did a separate kind of standalone episode with the plots running in the background when Harry Mudd comes back.
Yeah, and they're doing the time loop. Yeah.
That was a great Star Trek episode, and it was a nice update on cause and effect from Star Trek The Next Generation. I just want to see a little bit more of that, a little bit more of the Discovery, which they've been joking about, and I think they've kind of set the stage for that with a major part of the Klingon War now kind of retired and come to pass.
What about you, Tice?
I'm along for the ride, and I'm enjoying the ride. I'm not as deep into the lore as you guys are, so I've learned a lot just from listening to you guys on this podcast today. But I'm loving it. I love the production value. I love where the story's going. It's keeping me on my toes. It's not as you know, you don't really know where it's going. So I'm excited about that.
And I'm a very similar way.
One thing before you tell us, Andy, I will tell you though. James Frayne is Sarek.
Yes.
I just think, and it's in the back of my head every time he speaks now, I think he sounds like Bird Person from Rick and Morty. And it's just his delivery. I'm not saying he's bad or anything dramatic. It's just that it just reminds me of that, and I just kind of snicker every time he starts because it's like, Michael Burnham. And it's like, okay, yeah. It's like, right. I am Bird Person. Okay.
Stop. Don't make me think of that. Don't plant that idea in my head.
Wubba lubba dub dub. It means Rick needs help.
For me, the only thing I'd like to see him throw one more character from the original series, not in a main series character, but somebody else who they'd interacted with or referred to or talked about. I like it when they throw side things in to where maybe I don't know about it until I go. There's a great – I follow somebody on Twitter that tweets all the links to the original series that they've sort of stuck in through the episode, stuff that I didn't know or stuff that I missed. But like the one where they showed all the people who've received the highest commendation, that kind of thing was cool.
Yeah.
Just see a few names of people that you may or may not recognize. Doing stuff like that
– Decker.
Yeah,
pointing out
there was the Admiral Decker, who's not related to the Cadet
Decker.
Commodore Decker. Oh, is it Commodore Decker?
Commodore Decker bit it in the Doomsday Machine.
That's right.
Last scene going, you know, with the the blinding light. But they paged Cadet Decker in the
final episode. That's where watching this. I'm telling you guys, use your subtitles because you'll find stuff out that you wouldn't know otherwise.
Yeah.
All right, that's it for this episode of SLC Fanboys. We were talking Star Trek Discovery. Want to know what you think about Star Trek Discovery? Have you watched all 9 of the episodes? You better have, because we just told you everything that happens in all of them. But what did you think? Is there anything you want to see? If you're a big Star Trek fan, what did you like? What didn't you like? What would you like to see going forward? All the questions we asked, we'd love to hear from you on our Facebook page, slcfanboys.com, and then post it under the link to this episode. And you know what else? Share this episode. We love it, and we love having you along for the ride.
Thanks for checking out SLC Fanboys. Fulfill your destiny and follow us on social media. SLC Fanboys on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.